Primitive man, faced with a phenomenon he couldn't understand, like an eclipse of the sun, a clap of thunder, or an earthquake, would bow in fear and launch elaborate rituals to placate the enraged gods. Today, we are faced with a phenomenon we don't fully understand. And though our reaction to it may not be openly fearful, there is, nevertheless, an uneasy, apprehensive feeling about it in every land on earth. But we are not primitive men. Today we have the ability and the duty to study this phenomenon, to understand it, and to take whatever action our mounting knowledge demands.
United Nations Radio presents Report on the Invisible, a summary of a report to the General Assembly by the United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation.
Ladies and gentlemen, a brief foreword. The importance of this subject for every man, woman, child, animal, and organism on Earth is so great, and the interest in it so universal, that we make no apology for presenting this program without the aid of any dramatic device, contrived effect, or artificial colouring. What follows will not be ordinary, easy listening, but we hope it will give you a balanced appreciation of the complex problems posed by the effects of radiation, both natural and man-made. Since the world began, long, long before the first simple forms of life appeared, the Earth has always been both a receiver and a source of radiation. Cosmic radiation from outer space bombards it, and certain elements in the Earth's crust itself generate radioactivity. Among these are some of the normal constituents of the human body, like potassium-40 and carbon-14. These are the natural sources, the natural background. They have always been present, they always will be. But just over 60 years ago, science began to prepare the way for the nuclear present, in which man is adding his own sources of radiation to those of nature. Great names come to mind.
Wilhelm Röntgen,
the discoverer of X-rays in 1895.
Antoine Becquerel,
who probed the mysteries of natural radioactivity in 1896.
Rutherford, Einstein, Niels Bohr.
Three of the many famous contributors to basic physical knowledge.
Enrico Fermi,
the man who, in 1943, built the first atomic reactor. The work of these men, and many more, has changed the whole complexion of human life. With the power of the atom in our hands, total destruction is, for the first time, entirely possible. But this is not the only potential danger. The ultimate cataclysm of bombs is easy to comprehend. Not so easy is a subtler and largely invisible danger. The danger that, as we continue to develop the uses of atomic energy, and as man-made sources of radiation are multiplied, we may produce a kind of human and material wasteland without ever launching a missile. Since the questions raised by this possibility are of concern to all nations, the answers must be sought internationally. Thus, on December the 3rd, 1955, the General Assembly of the United Nations adopted Resolution 913.
This resolution set up a scientific committee with members drawn from 15 countries: Argentina, Australia, Belgium, Brazil, Canada, Czechoslovakia, Egypt, France, India, Japan, Mexico, Sweden, the Soviet Union, the United Kingdom, and the United States. Its task was to receive and assemble reports on levels of radiation in the environment to which man is exposed, and on scientific observations and experiments related to the effects of radiation on man. In short, the Assembly asked this committee to assess within the limits of present knowledge and with the whole world as its field of inquiry, what is happening and what can happen.
The committee met first in March 1956. The man who has been its secretary during the last 2 years of its work is Dr. Raymond K. Appleyard, and we've asked him to describe briefly the committee's method of work, how it went about the job. Dr. Appleyard?
Well, the committee held 5 sessions in all, each lasting several weeks. For much of the time, they split up into informal working groups, each one consisting of specialists in the various fields being studied. You see, the committee was composed of experts in a number of different disciplines: genetics, radiology, physiology, public health, and so on. These working groups carried out their assignments by the classic method of scientific discussion, free give and take around a blackboard. They were subject to no fixed national or other composition, no rigid rules or procedures, and no records other than the technical drafts and papers which slowly grew and emerged from the verbal interplay between experts who, despite a difference of tongues, all proved to speak the common language of science. Right at the beginning, governments in all UN member states were asked to submit information to the committee, and in all, over 200 technical reports were sent in. In addition to governments, the committee had the cooperation of such UN specialized agencies as the World Health Organization, the Food and Agriculture Organization, UNESCO, and the World Meteorological Organization. And, of course, such bodies as the International Commission on Radiological Protection gave help, as did many individual scientists in different countries. Indeed, the traditional scientific spirit and practice of international cooperation everywhere was deeply appreciated by the committee.
The committee's report is now ready for the General Assembly when it meets in September this year. It's a document of almost 600 mimeographed pages, a main section written in such a way that its complicated subject matter can be understood by the non-specialist reader, and a number of technical annexes, which are of considerable scientific interest, since they contain new material and frequently follow new lines of thought. The titles of these annexes reveal the scope of the report.
Definitions of quantities, units, symbols, and methods of measurement.
This is basic, for without standardization, unnecessary difficulties are raised and meaningful deductions are obscured.
Radiation from natural sources and man-made sources.
In these, data from many geographic and climatic areas, and on the medical and industrial uses of X-rays and isotopes.
Environmental contamination.
Here, the question of radioactive fallout from nuclear explosions, the hazard of strontium-90 and cesium-137, and the atomic waste disposal question.
Fundamental radiobiology.
Here, technical data on radiation chemistry, biochemical and biological effects, how these effects may vary, the sensitivity of different organs of the body, and the body's capacity for recovery.
The somatic and genetic effects of radiation.
Somatic means, of course, the physical effects in an individual, how his general health may be affected. Genetic, on the other hand, means how radiation may affect an individual's offspring. In this particular annex, there is data from observations on the life-shortening effects of radiation, on the relation between radiation and leukemia, on the rate of genetic mutation or change, and on the likely consequences when the reproductive process is affected by radiation. That is the outline. Within it lies the substance, the fruit of almost 3 years of careful and objective fact-finding. Of the deductions from the facts, the report says,
as with any scientific assessment, this report must be subject to revision in the light of advancing knowledge. The committee hopes that the report will assist this advance by stimulating critical discussions among scientists.
Bearing this in mind, we'll try now to give a faithful summary of the committee's findings. Let's look first at radiation from natural sources.
The level of natural radiation varies from place to place. It depends on the degree of local radioactivity in the Earth's surface, and, as far as cosmic rays are concerned, on altitude and latitude. For example, between sea level and 3,000 feet, the dose rate from cosmic rays increases by a factor of about 3. And concerning the variations in the Earth itself, there are some areas where the level of radiation is above average, or even exceptionally high. One place is Kerala in India. Another is Guarapari in Brazil. Both areas are rich in monazite sand, which contains thorium.
And the effects of this natural background?
The committee says that it seems likely that some genetic and possibly some somatic injury is caused by natural radiation. However, they point out that while we do know quite a lot about the biological effect of large doses of radiation, we know very little about the possible effects of occasional small doses, or of low levels of continuous irradiation. For this reason, comparative studies of the population of areas like Kerala or Guarapari would be extremely valuable.
Now come the additions from the artificial man-made sources. These the report divides into two sections: the medical and industrial uses of radiation to which man may be exposed, and the contamination of the environment by nuclear explosions or the disposal of radioactive waste products. Incidentally, waste disposal is not at present a major problem, but it could become one as we expand our uses of atomic energy. The committee, therefore, urges a constant watch and that international agreements on disposal be worked out. This part of the report is divided in two because, while medical and industrial radiation may affect only fractions of any population, the radioactive debris after an explosion, returning to Earth as fallout, is spread over the whole world and could affect every member of every population. So, what are the main artificial sources, apart from fallout?
First in importance are the medical uses of X-rays, and to some extent isotopes for diagnostic and therapeutic purposes. Second, their use in industry, both for research and in production techniques. Third are some minor sources, like luminous watch dials, television tubes, and shoe-fitting fluoroscopes.
Though minor, these last sources can be potent. A recent case in the United States revealed that a certain make of luminous watch dial was delivering a gamma ray dose to the wrist, which in 2 days provided the equivalent of a whole year's exposure to natural radiation. The particular watches were withdrawn from sale. But let's look at the medical and industrial aspects.
The use of X-rays in medicine is, of course, much more extensive in some countries than in others. But where they are used a lot, it has been estimated that each year, the genetically significant dose and the dose to the bone marrow are both comparable to the natural dose. This is an important fact, and the committee notes that data from several countries indicates it is possible to reduce this exposure rate by careful attention to techniques, without in any way undermining the medical usefulness of X-rays. In the industrial field at present, the degree to which radiation workers are exposed is relatively small, so the chance of injury is small. But the number of people engaged in atomic work will increase in the future, and individual exposure could be high. For these reasons, the matter deserves special attention.
This brings us to the question causing the deepest misgivings of all: the extent and effect of radioactive fallout. The general fallout picture is familiar enough. After a nuclear explosion, the radioactive cloud spreads certain materials, most of which are short-lived isotopes, in the troposphere, that is, up to a height of about 7.5 miles. During several months, they are carried round the world and brought to Earth in rainfall. Then there is the much slower fallout from the stratosphere. Here, the significant materials include the long-lived isotopes strontium-90, which has a half-life of 28 years, and cesium-137, with a half-life of 30 years. They settle back to Earth very gradually. Now for the observations in the report.
As far as fallout from the troposphere is concerned, temporary increases in radioactivity have been noted in limited areas shortly after bomb tests, which may produce dose rates about equal to those from natural sources. However, information on this is incomplete, and the committee emphasizes that it is almost impossible to gauge properly the biological significance of this source of contamination. In assessing the effects of strontium-90 and cesium-137 in stratospheric fallout, many things will have to be considered: diet, nature of the soil, climate, agricultural conditions, and so on. But we do know the behavior of the two isotopes. Cesium-137 is responsible for most of the irradiation of the gonads, or reproductive organs, from fallout, because when it enters the body, it is distributed more or less evenly, thus irradiating the whole body. Strontium-90, however, concentrates in bones. Because of this, it has been found most often in the bones of children, in whom new bone is being formed all the time. In adults, bone formation was complete before the environment became contaminated, and there was little or no strontium-90 present.
The report contains figures of the concentration of strontium-90 in various foods in various countries. These differ for different countries, but measured in strontium units per gram of calcium, here is the picture for milk.
In 1955, 2 to 7.5.
In 1956, 3.2 to 9.2.
In 1957, 3.5 to 9.3.
Other concentrations reported were these.
In 1956, in white rice in Japan, 36 to 62 strontium units.
In 1956-57, in frozen vegetables in the United States, about 10.
One final word about fallout.
Since weapon testing began until now, the radiation dose from fallout does not exceed 10% of the natural background. If tests are continued, the dose will become equal to the natural in about 100 years.
The chapters of the report on the somatic and genetic effects of radiation represent a very extensive survey of the subject. In analyzing the somatic effects, one basic and important consideration is noted.
It's essential to know what is called the dose-effect relation. That is the relationship between the size and frequency of the effect and the amount of radiation. For instance, the effect may be in direct proportion to the dose, so that any dose, however small, will have some effect. Or there may be a threshold, a degree of radiation, below which there is no effect.
In the case of many biological effects, it's known that a threshold does exist. With genetic effects, however, the committee emphasizes that there is at present no known threshold. Genetic damage may occur at any level. But to review quickly some of the more serious somatic effects. First, the blood.
Most cells in the blood-forming organs react promptly and to relatively small single doses of radiation. Chronic or repeated exposure at low levels will upset the production of both white and red blood cells, even though the effect may not be noticed for some years.
This, of course, may lead to leukemia, and an increase in the incidence of the disease has been observed in a number of groups, including the survivors of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Now, the effects on bones.
Many effects on bone have been observed after both external and internal irradiation. The damage caused has ranged from a temporary stopping of the growth of bone in children after relatively small doses to actual fractures after exposure to high doses. Of special importance is the fact that the growing bones of children are much more vulnerable to radiation than those of mature or old people. The whole development of the skeleton in childhood can be upset by moderate doses.
Next, the stomach and the intestines.
The gastrointestinal tract can be injured by radiation fairly easily. The secretion of various digestive juices can be affected, and ulcers can be produced in the lining of the stomach and the intestines. This can have the effect of altering the delicate balance that exists in nature between host and parasite. That is to say, bacteria which normally live in the intestines without causing any harm may, following radiation damage, cause infection. However, the dose level needed to produce these serious effects has to be high.
Next, the skin.
Of all the organs of the human body, the skin is the most frequently exposed to radiation, and it has been probably the most frequently damaged. Contamination of the skin with radioactive material can produce severe effects, as has been observed among Japanese fishermen and people in the Marshall Islands who were exposed to fallout in 1954. Depending on the amount of the dose absorbed, the effect on the skin ranges from changes in color to bad ulceration.
Next, the reproductive organs.
The ovaries and testes are highly sensitive to radiation damage. Temporary or permanent changes in fertility can be produced by a large single dose or by the cumulative effect of small, repeated doses.
Prenatal effects.
The lowest dose of radiation that would fairly consistently alter development of a human baby before birth is unknown. However, malformations have been observed in children who have been exposed to X-rays or other radiations before they were born.
One more point about somatic effects. The report says,
it is a peculiar and striking characteristic of radiation injury that although apparent recovery occurs among survivors after exposure to a large single dose, certain delayed effects may appear in later years. Late changes that have been observed include
loss of hair, changes in the texture and color of hair, cataracts in the eye, anemia, and leukemia. It has been suggested that the normal lifespan may be shortened, but there is no evidence to prove this as yet.
Now the genetic effects. And first, a quotation from the first paragraph in this chapter of the report.
The inherited characteristics of man distinguish him from other species, and in part determine the nature of each one of us. They have been accumulated over a number of generations. Experimental work on many organisms has shown that ionizing radiation can cause changes in the inherited characters, changes which are for the most part harmful. It therefore cannot be doubted that exposure of the germ cells of human beings to such radiations will occasionally cause similar changes among individuals in future populations. While some hazards are implicit in almost all technological advances, it must be remembered that inherited changes are an inescapable consequence of the irradiation of human beings. They therefore pose ethical and legal problems which should be of special concern to governments.
The genetic effects of radiation are causing widespread and grave concern. Yet it's in this field that we find some of the most serious gaps in our knowledge. The committee recognizes this, stresses it, and recommends many research projects which should be undertaken. One basic problem is to determine accurately the dose-mutation relationship. With somatic effects, you remember, the dose-effect relationship can often be fixed in the biological sense. But to discover the amount of radiation that will increase the mutation rate in genes, the keys to hereditary characteristics, involves extremely complex and difficult studies and procedures. But this much is certain.
Mutations, changes, caused by radiation are generally harmful. They increase in direct proportion to the amount of exposure, even when the dose level is very low. To double the natural mutation rate, it is believed that a dose between 3 and 30 times the natural radiation level would be needed. On this basis, it is calculated that something like 4% of all live-born infants at present are affected with hereditary disorders or handicaps. About a quarter of these are directly related to the mutation rate. If the mutation rate is doubled, this number will be doubled.
The genetic effects chapter of the report covers many aspects of the problem. One, of particular interest, which we may mention, is that in a number of organisms, there is good reason to believe that a mutation caused by radiation is not completed at the moment of irradiation. It seems to take place in stages over a period of time, 10 minutes or even a few hours. Now, this raises the possibility of repairing the effect or halting the change, provided action is taken during the limited time period after the irradiation has occurred. Of course, we know very, very little about this at present, and the committee considers that investigations of this possibility should be actively undertaken. Now, before leaving the genetics chapter, we quote one of its final conclusions.
In the absence of evidence to the contrary, the committee concludes that the mutational effects of small doses of radiation delivered to the human germline over a long period are cumulative. Hence, any irradiation of whole populations must be considered as having genetic consequences.
And so to the general conclusions. First of all, we introduce once again Dr. Raymond Appleyard.
This report, valuable and important as one may hope it will be, is not the last word on this subject. As you heard earlier in the program, it must be subject to revision in the light of advancing knowledge. In one of the concluding paragraphs, this point is underlined in these words. Any present attempt to evaluate the effects of sources of radiation to which the world population is exposed can produce only tentative estimates with wide margins of uncertainty. The truth is that we still lack an awful lot of knowledge, and the committee urges a great deal of intensive research into both radiation levels and biological and genetic effects. For instance, many factors which determine the distribution of fallout from nuclear explosions require further study, particularly the behavior of fission products in the stratosphere. and in the biological and genetic field, we need more fundamental knowledge to understand and control the way in which radiation influences body cells and their hereditary material. Work toward all these ends is, of course, going on all the time in many places. It should, indeed it must, be intensified and expanded within the general framework of the scientific effort and outlook of our time.
The report ends with two important overall statements. One represents the majority view in the committee, the other is included as the view of the minority. We shall quote them both. First, the majority statement.
The committee concludes that all steps designed to minimize irradiation of human populations will act to the benefit of human health. Such steps include the avoidance of unnecessary exposure resulting from medical or industrial procedures for peaceful use on the one hand, and the cessation of contamination of the environment by explosions of nuclear weapons on the other. The committee is aware that considerations involving effective control of all these sources of radiation involve national and international decisions which lie outside the scope of its work.
The minority statement is this.
The physical and biological data presented in the report make it plain that efforts should be made to eliminate the uncontrolled source of radiation. That is, to end experimental nuclear and thermonuclear explosions and enable the committee to draw the conclusion that there should be an immediate cessation of test explosions of nuclear weapons.
This report is now in the hands of the governments of all the members of the United Nations. When the General Assembly meets in September, their delegates will discuss it in detail. What they decide to recommend remains to be seen. But already, the World Health Organization, at its 11th World Health Assembly this year, took action to help fill some of the gaps in our knowledge. On June the 12th, a resolution was passed unanimously. It recognizes the necessity for protecting present and future generations against the harmful effects of radiation. It expresses the hope that as we go on to use atomic energy more and more, we shall improve the methods of protection more and more, and hold the levels of radiation from all sources within internationally accepted limits. It recognizes the hazards of radiation and authorizes a program of research. It recommends studies of the effect of radiation on human heredity, of the relationship between radiation and health, and of effective measures for the treatment of diseases caused by radiation. So, as we said at the beginning, to study, to understand, and to take appropriate action. This is our duty. This we can do.
You have just heard a summary of the report of the UN Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation, entitled Report on the Invisible. This program was produced by the international staff of United Nations Radio.